Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
At Vuse, we're vapor done right. Always simple. Always in your pocket. So you can focus on what really matters. Like getting back to your podcast. Find out more at Vuse.com. That's Vuse.com.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Nolan Wells went to Horn Island with his friends on the 4th of July. His friends came back. He did not. His body was found in the water 2 days later. And before the autopsy was finished, before toxicology could come back, before the FBI touched his phone, the sheriff told the country no foul play was suspected. The question is whether this investigation is structured to follow the evidence wherever it leads, or whether that early statement already pointed it somewhere and it's been walking in that direction ever since. I'm here to say, I don't know, but words do matter. You may remember another sheriff, Mr. Nanos, who had that harsh reality check earlier in the year where his words matter, wasn't used to people taking him so seriously. This is a different sheriff, different words, but no foul play is suspected before an autopsy, before toxicology, before the FBI touches the digital evidence. I don't quite know how you get there. That's the question I think we're going to start with this morning. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor with myself, and Robin Dreek, former FBI special agent, chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Let's start there. Eric, what does a statement like that do to the direction of an investigation that, you know, it's in its super early stages? They didn't have all the data. So how do you go and make a statement like that to the public? What's going on here?
Tony, I'm worried that such a statement issued prematurely can have a chilling effect on the investigation. You know, if there are multiple agencies involved, they're all hearing this and they're saying, oh, well, you know, perhaps we can kind of put this on the back burner. We've got a lot of other work we got to do. And so I'm worried that it would take away from sort of the dedication of resources and manpower and everything else that is required to really unearth what happened here, because it's still obviously an ongoing mystery. They don't know the answers. And if you don't know the answers, how can you say whether foul play is suspected or not? I just thought it's terribly premature.
Yeah, you definitely lay down an early confirmation bias with that. And it happens in multiple layers where now they're going to move in a direction, again, totally potentially unconsciously, but just move in a direction where they're trying to confirm that there is no foul play involved. And then also you cascade on top of that the position of the sheriff, position of authority. You're looking for promotion. Do you really want to go against what your boss already said? So it really sets things up, you know, for potential not goodness. So how do you think they walk that back? How do you walk something back if you're the sheriff to now go back into the world that we should be living in, the world of maybe? The world of maybe opens up all possibilities that we can explore all the tendrils that go out from this and go, like we said at the opening, where the investigation takes us.
Robin, very true. And I think that they, certainly law enforcement needs to be now kind of overly diligent. I think they need to sort of overcompensate for this statement that they made, in the sense of, you know, we need to interview everybody under the sun we can possibly find. We need to seize digital devices where appropriate that might have information revealing what happened here. We need to talk to all of these businesses. We need to scour all of the premises for potential video evidence, all of those things. I think they really need to be overly diligent now because of that statement that was issued.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really tone-deaf statement to make. I mean, especially in the atmosphere we're in the state they're in, with the track record of the state that we're in. And it's just like, come on, dude. Come on. Even, I mean, you just, you, there's no room for that just sort of flippantness in something like this, where everything is ripe to explode very quick and people want to go down this road of a narrative or that road of a narrative. Words matter. I don't know what it takes. I want to take these sheriffs and just shake them. Like, come on, your words matter. You're in the position. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm somewhat trying to give a benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's just another one of these. I'm not used to saying shit in public and people listening, because I don't know. I would think once you have that title, once you've worked your way up to sheriff, you kind of got to take your job and what you say seriously. Was this just a slip of the tongues, just a bad way of describing something? We've all done it. We've all said things like, oh, I wish I would have said it more that way. Should he just at this point just walk that back? Just say, look, I misspoke. I kind of meant to say it this way. It's on me. Just own the damn thing. Or is it better at this point just to shut up and show in action in the investigative work that they are taking this seriously, rather than just give lip service to the public?
Why not give just an updated statement to the public? You know, he doesn't necessarily have to say, hey, I kind of screwed up when I said this thing inartfully, but instead give an updated status to the public in terms of the actions that are being undertaken to investigate what may have happened here. And I think that would probably suffice. It doesn't have to be the sort of hat in hand, oh, what was me thing, but they can be like, hey, you know, here is all the things we're doing. In fact, we're enlisting other agencies. I've heard the FBI might be involved. Yeah. Give the public some assurance that there is a diligent investigation going on. That might be the next appropriate step.
Go ahead, Robin.
Yeah, and I looked at that too. So, you know, I did a deeper dive again from what we know, you know, seeing if we do have another Nanos in the making here. And from the outset, from what we know now as this recording, no, he's actually got a really good sheriff. The sheriff here is an elected position, but he was appointed, so he wasn't elected. He will be up for election when it comes through. He's a National Academy graduate, which he was selected to go through FBI's National Academy. He's got a good reputation. His department's got a good reputation. So I'm hoping that he can do what you just said, Eric, because what you do in times when you blow trust, which had happened here by statements like that, the only thing you can really do is then give that transparency in areas in which people don't feel safe. And so, like, to your point, if he now just counters the foible of words with a lot of transparency, more frequent updates, and just what's going on, it goes a long way. And to your question about the FBI's involvement, and then to one of our listeners, I did look it up. The FBI is involved, like they generally are in big cases like this, in a support role, looking at digital and forensics and such. So that's what I found out.
With this being not, as of this moment, it's not being classified as anything nefarious as of this moment. What sort of latitude do the local authorities have to do a deeper investigation, to look into everything that could disappear quickly, everything that could be destroyed or not already has been destroyed on people's devices, on digital records, all of those sort of things, the bilge pump, go take a look at that. Was there actually water coming in on the boat? All these sort of things. From my understanding, and I think a lot of people's understanding, when you're at this stage, and it's not a criminal investigation yet, it may never be, it's a lot of suggesting, it's a lot of asking, please volunteer, come forward, give us the information. And if you have nothing to hide, I would say, hopefully, yes. I mean, for the sake of everybody involved, that if there's nothing going on, please look at my device. You'll see we were friends. I don't know what the hell's going on here, but this should help port you in that direction. But people are also going to clam up. They're going to circle wagons, and circling the wagons sometimes looks like conspiracy, sometimes looks like cover-up, when they're just afraid of getting a finger pointed at them for something that wasn't actually there. But the mob is already there with the pitchforks ready to go after them. There's already been death threats against friends and all of that that's been going on. What latitude do they have to get in, to get that information from everyone that was around, to put together a picture of what happened, with it not being a criminal investigation yet?
possible. Well, Tony, they have broad investigatory powers, even if they haven't got to the place where they believe it's criminal yet. They still have a number of things at their disposal, including like all standard law enforcement resources. So we're talking about, manpower, procuring video, getting statements, doing interviews, assessing the scene, assessing things that were at the scene, like the boat. On top of that, according to reports, there is some allegation that some of the statements may have been inconsistent. There's mm-hmm. some allegation that some of the timelines from different folks might not match up. And so those are prime examples of things on which law enforcement can hone in and try to either confirm or deny, hey, was this just some coincidence, some mistake? Or instead, do we have, two people saying things that couldn't possibly both be true?
You know, to that point, Eric, I'm sorry, Tony, did you want to go?
You're good.
So to that point, Eric, the easiest thing we have as an investigator early on in a case like this, as you're investigating to see if it's, just a horrendous accident or if it is criminal, is, like you said, it's a lot of interviewing. You conduct a lot of interviews and then you're cross-referencing these interviews. At what stage what do you need to hear as a prosecutor and an official to elevate it from to the next level? Because we always go by intrusiveness of the technique used. The least intrusive is an interview. You do an interview, you take notes, and then you keep interviewing all these people involved. You can observe from the outside without being intrusive and getting a subpoena. Subpoena requires probable cause. That's what starts elevating it. What are you going to need as a prosecutor, do you think, to elevate this, or a judge is going to want to hear to elevate from an interview of someone? Is an inconsistent statement between two people enough, or do they need something more?
Sure. So we have, like you said, the interview level is really the introductory level. And then from there, you need to look into search warrants and production of records requests, where you request from digital devices or from apps on digital devices, information about activity, things like that. In order to get to that place, Robin, you do need probable cause, but probable cause is a pretty low standard. That's, reasonable grounds to believe that a crime has occurred and that there's someone who is the perpetrator of that crime. You put that together in a search warrant, you give it to a judge, see if a judge allows you further access into, like you said, these more intrusive legal mechanisms like search warrants and what have you. Inconsistent statement probably in and of itself is not enough, but an absence of an innocent explanation is something that the judge can also consider. And when you put all those together, do you meet that low standard of probable cause? That's up to a judge.
So on that, I'm so sorry, Tony. I'm so curious about how we get at the cell phones.
Yeah.
Because the mother has the son's cell phone, and she's claiming that from her baseline of understanding her son's behavior, she's got her life's arc of her son. He's usually doing X, Y, and Z, texting at this time of day, taking photos, and she says it's absent. She has possession of that, so I'm assuming that she now is the authority that can give access to that cell phone. I'm curious, though, so say there's another individual, friends, family, or whoever's out on that boat. If they have cell phones they've voluntarily turned over, because we heard they did or were asked to at least, as of this recording, if someone's noting that there, is that enough, in other words, for someone else? Is it enough that it's been stated or assumed, or a friend said, I think he deleted or she deleted stuff from that cell phone? Is that enough to get a warrant to search? Or what's the bar for it?
Are we at a probable cause state, I guess, question is going to be, are we at a probable cause state with the inconsistent statements? Because, you do have the big one that everybody talks about is the allegedly these are unconfirmed, but it is what it is. Allegedly, some reports are saying that some of the boys said that he was going to go and get a ride back. He wanted to go hang out with the girl. The girl says he was going to go ride back with his friends. The family says he would always ride back with his friends. It's not impossible for an 18-year-old to change course when they see a pretty girl and go, I know I normally would go back with you guys, but I'm going over here. It would be a deviation of behavior, but it's not an impossibility of deviation of behavior. So, is that an area where that would be probable cause because of the conflicting, inconsistent statements? Or is that... does that not reach that bar? I know the bar is low, but does that quite get there?
yeah, you know, it wouldn't be shocking for a 40-year-old to change course and go pursue a pretty girl. You know, those things happen, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, is that enough? I think what we're talking about is a lack of some kind of natural explanation in terms of what happened. And then the witnesses who would have possession of the information regarding what happened appear to be inconsistent. Does that give rise to reasonable grounds as to whether there was a potential criminal cause of what happened? I think when you have these conflicting statements, you have an absence of a natural explanation, at least presently. I think that we're getting close. I don't know if, but then Tony, like you mentioned, the deleting stuff from the phone, that a judge could look at that as potential concealment, as potentially withholding information. And I think when you put all those things together, is a judge going to err on the side of, I'm going to give you access to these devices because we need to know what happened to this kiddo? I think probably.
How much of this is everyone applying their own narrative to the story of, well, he's always on Snapchat, and in no way, my God, this mother is grieving her son. She's trying to look at his behaviors and go, well, this seems out of character. So in no way am I like questioning her or saying, you know, anything negative here. But sometimes people do things that are out of character. There's other people, other friends who've made statements now about, yeah, when we're out on the boat or we're out on the beach here, we put our phones on the boat and it sits there. So maybe he wasn't out there snapping all day. I was wondering about service on the damn island number two. Like with Snapchat, sometimes if you don't have service, it's not going to actually go anywhere either. I mean, there does seem to be potential roads where there wouldn't be anything on his Snapchat that day. It is what it is. And until we get information back from Snapchat and the data of the phone, the metadata saying, yes, there was in fact deletion, which we don't know yet. That's the assertion that's being made because mom is saying there was nothing there. We don't know of there actual being deletions as of yet. You throw all these into the narrative and it makes people think that something is suspicious. I would also think the authorities, and I'm wondering, do you think the authorities are also being cautious on saying that or treating this as something more than an accidental drowning to out of a litany of caution for all of the friends, all of the people that were around him, not in a way of cover up, but to prevent a mass mob coming in and saying, see, something happened here, when the investigation simply needs to run its course, but just signals out of an investigation saying, we need to look at everybody's phone, we're going to take your phone. That immediately would signal to people that something is awry, even when in fact, in reality, it may not be. It's information gathering. But that reads to a lot of people as something far darker than it may actually be.
Gosh, Tony, the authorities are in a difficult position here because it is a very delicate situation. We are very sensitive, of course, highly emotionally charged, certainly for the family and friends. And so, you know, on the one hand, they want to show the authorities, hey, we are looking into things. We are being diligent. We are looking into devices where appropriate. On the other hand, they don't want to stir up the community into such an outrage that you got a mob with pitchforks. My understanding is that, according to reports, some folks claim they've already been like threatened just simply because they're proximal to this alleged incident and what happened. And so, gosh, how does law enforcement balance? Hey, we want to keep the peace in the community. We also want to let them know if something nefarious did go down, we're looking into it. And I think striking that balance can be a very difficult task.
Yeah, because I get what they're doing. That balance is so challenging and difficult because of all the sensitivities. But if you're looking at the law of averages, I just double check them again. Homicides do happen in this area. They're extremely rare. If you're looking at law of averages, there are rip currents there. And and related drownings because of those types of rip currents in this area, especially on a holiday weekend. There's about 100 drownings per year nationally from that in this area, and 227 rip current fatalities since 2002. And this area is actually known for those rip currents as well. Jesus. So I know they're playing, you know, as law enforcement. Remember that you create filters, and unfortunately, when you have all the eyes of the world on you, they want some clarity, but they don't have clarity yet. So you get statements like the sheriff put out, and anyway, makes it a mess.
Well, and a lot of people, you know, when you think drowning, if you've never dealt with riptides or drowning or anybody, you know, struggling in water, sometimes people think it's this real, I'm out here drowning, somebody help me. Drownings are quite often not that at all. Everybody's doing their thing over here. Hey, where's so-and-so? That's how drownings happen, because nobody saw it happen, because the riptide pulled them out and boom, they're gone. And if you've never been in a riptide, you don't know what the hell you're talking about, because they're dangerous, they're scary as shit, and they can take you out pretty damn fast. I've been in one myself. It was scary as shit. So, I mean, that is another thing that came to mind, too. It's not always this, he could have, as well as many other things that could have happened, that is a very dangerous thing to navigate. Even if you are, because they go, well, he's an athlete, he's this, he's like, I don't care if you're Superman.
Oh, yeah.
A riptide will kill you if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
And this one in this area, they're saying is 8 feet per second, roughly 5.5 miles an hour that's been recorded in this area.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot that could be going on there. The coroner saw no obvious signs of trauma and sent the body to the state medical examiner. That sounds good to me. I mean, that sounds like, okay, we're crossing T's, we're dotting I's. He gave his answer, but he's not like, this isn't the end-all be-all. We need to send it further. So that's good. It shows the system is working. It's being processed. These things do, in fact, take time. But people drowned in homicides, too. Held under, incapacitated, pushed from a boat. I mean, what does that autopsy actually need to show for this investigation to change course, Eric?
Yeah, you know, it, of course, if the toxicology report came back and there was some intoxication, I'm not saying there is, hypothetically, you'd want to know the source of that intoxication. Was it self-ingested? Did someone give him something? On top of that, you want to look at not only obvious signs of trauma, but non-obvious signs of trauma. You know, you might not see anything, for example, on the head. The person has hair, but sometimes there can be bruising under the scalp area that is simply not visible. On top of that, you know, there are internal things that can be examined. For example, when the hyoid bone is fractured, sometimes that can be indicative of strangulation, even if there are no sort of outward marks or signs. You know, if someone has an arm around someone's neck, people bruise differently. So I think that we really got to do a thorough dive into that autopsy, and there could be findings that could be suggestive of a need for additional investigation. We just don't know yet.
Yeah, so many questions. Give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube for this segment and everything we've been talking about. Love for you to weigh in. We do read it all. We're reading the comments live as they come in as well.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.